Everyone, welcome to How to Build Creative and Usable Websites, another online masterclass on the journey to Web Summit. My name is Beatriz Oliveira. I have been working in technology for almost 20 years now, and I'm the CEO and founder of BindTuning. BindTuning is a leading provider of UX services for SharePoint, and we have developed a framework of tools for creating beautiful user interfaces in SharePoint and Office 365. So if you have any questions, please use Twitter using hashtag MicrosoftJWS. Today, we're going to cover different topics on creating creative websites. And we will cover some web design trends. And on this topic, I'll try to talk about around 9 trends, namely some related to navigation, some related to the usage of cards, talking about also illustration, usage of photography, typography, some covering on storytelling. Also, I'll talk about micro interactions, animations, and parallax scrolling. Then I'll talk a little bit about how to create some rapid prototyping of your websites. And when you really want to get your hands dirty on the code, I'll talk about some no code or almost no code site building tools. So let's start by talking about current web design trends and how they are so important on creating beautiful and different websites. And I will cover 3 main goals which we can or we typically try to achieve by using web design trends. One of these goals is the usage of UI patterns, and we'll see in a minute why this is important when building and deciding what to select when building our websites. How to be unique when you are creating websites, user interactions. How to deliver creative and interactive experiences as well. And just as in fashion, trends change over time. And we have seen that trends come and go. The trends that we now see nowadays will be present for the upcoming couple of years, and they will be kind of an inspirational start point for all of you. You can dictate your own trends. So technology is just a tool. The purpose of these trends is helping you create great user experiences, engaging more users and driving far more user adoption. And the first of the goals that I'd like to talk about is the use of UI patterns. And unlike UX, which has to do with each user's experience when using a site, user interface is something we can act on that does not depend on different users. And we can control every aspect of the user interface of the website. And we have seen that in the past years, hundreds of different UI patterns have been defined. And these patterns are no more than reusable solutions to common problems, common user interface problems. They're not features, they're not fully designed features. They are best practices that designers and developers can use to solve common problems when designing a web application and system. As a starting point, I'd like to suggest you guys take a look at this website, ui-patterns.com. You will see hundreds of different UI patterns that are used nowadays. And today I'm going to focus on very specific patterns. And using patterns is normally a very good idea because patterns help us reduce the learning curve. So if this is a common solution for a recurring problem, it means that once users integrate that into their knowledge, they don't have to learn how to make use of the pattern again. So if we use patterns, we are reducing immensely the user's learning curve when using our website. and we are increasing learnability. So in fact, we will be creating far smoother user experiences so that our users can easily achieve their goals. And the first pattern I would like to talk about, or a few patterns, are related to navigation. It may seem kind of a simple topic, but the truth is that when we are trying to create innovative websites, navigation can be a challenge. And nowadays, designers and developers try to approach navigation in far more creative ways. Still, we can never sacrifice website usability, because it doesn't matter how good our website is if our users can't get their way around it. So we have to focus on not making our users think, and we have to make it easy for them to wander around our website. So if we take a look at some of these examples, we can easily spot navigation items. So we can easily tell that when we see an icon that tells us that we should scroll a page, we can easily spot if we see a button, even though on these images there is no detail, there is no text, we can say that those elements represent either a button, either a navigation area, or either a scroll icon. So these patterns do amazing things for learnability, because our users will know exactly how to interact with our website. And when it comes to navigation, we are very used to this kind of common top area navigation. And when we look at these separated elements on the top of a page, we know immediately that this is a navigation area. So it's clear, it's self-evident. There is absolutely no learning curve. So navigation must be clear as a first step. And besides being clear, navigation must provide orientation. So users have to know exactly where they're standing, where they've come from, and it has to provide consistency. So when we're navigating through different pages or through different sections, we have to have the same sense of global navigation. And one of the patterns I'd like to talk about, so that we can get a little away from that traditional top navigation, is talking about vertical navigation. And for this matter, I would like to share with you a couple of examples that make beautiful use of vertical navigation areas. So this first example shows a right-hand side navigation, which is also not so typical, because typical vertical navigations are displayed normally on the left side. So this is a right side navigation area, where you can see that navigation elements are very rich visually. So there is a great usage of typography within this navigation, creating hierarchy, beautiful usage of colors. And this navigation area is extremely rich, because not only I have navigation elements, but also I have a social media area on the bottom, as well as my account login button. So using vertical navigation like this can be a very interesting approach to getting away from traditional top navigation. Here is another example, similar to the previous one, also engaging typography, and we can see that there is strong usage of typography on this navigation area. Navigation is scrollable, so meaning that we can accommodate more items when necessary. And in this case, this navigation element also accommodates a search button area. But we can create different types of vertical navigation when we don't have such complex structures. So on this example, for example, designers have created a simple approach to a vertical navigation by creating these icons on the left-hand side. And as we scroll down the page and move to different areas, we can see that these elements get selected. So this is a kind of a simple approach to a vertical navigation when there are not many items to be displayed. Okay, we've seen this. So why using vertical navigation? It's uncommon. So if you're trying to get away from traditional top navigation, you can make use of vertical navigation. So it's distinctive. It's very effective because users recognize functionality on these vertical navigation areas. And if I go back a little, you can see that the usage, for example, of hamburger menus and the usage of the cross icon to close this area, users are very used to this type of iconography from mobile devices. On the other hand, vertical navigation can take away some real estate if it's always on the screen. So it's a good idea to keep it collapsible, as I've just shown. And it may not be suitable for very complex menu structures. So if you are developing websites with a lot of the menu items, eventually it might be harder to accommodate those items on a vertical navigation element rather than on a normal traditional horizontal navigation, where we can, for example, create mega menus with more complex menu structures. Another very innovative type of navigation and a very, very fresh trend is what it's called full screen navigation. We have seen other kinds of menus show up recently, like hidden menus and minimal navbars. However, sometimes they do not work well with all websites. In contrast with these full screen menus, which are in most cases suitable for kind of any type of project. They are extremely versatile and they can enhance user experience immensely rather than other approaches. And they are used to display beautifully text and multimedia all together. So let me show you a couple examples. And let me close these. So this Impossible Bureau is an agency, and navigation is accessible actually by clicking on their logo, which is quite uncommon. So it's something different. But as you can see, the logo animates. So there is this micro interaction when I mouse over the logo and tells me that there is something more to see. So when we click on their logo, you will see that there is a full screen navigation that actually shows up. And this full screen navigation is extremely rich in terms of visuals. It combines not only text, and text is actually rich in itself because it has not only the titles, but some description of what each of these areas does. But visually, we can see this beautiful gradient on the back. And additionally, there is detailed information of sub-elements within each of these areas. For example, when we see this area for case studies, we can actually scroll down on some of their case studies and have further information on what is available. The same goes, for example, for the news areas, where we can actually scroll through the latest news and decide even before we click to enter one of these areas. So you can see that this full screen navigation is visually very, very rich when compared to traditional top navigation. Another beautiful example is this French website about neighborhoods. And each of these navigational elements takes me to a different neighborhood. And there, not only there is a visual clue of what's coming, but it's very rich because we are seeing video. So I can actually see how each of these neighborhoods looks like even before selecting one of those. And there is sound associated with it. So it's a very, very rich interface that allows me to select my navigation before proceeding. A more product-oriented approach is displayed on this this website. MASS is a manufacturer company, and navigation is also accessible by this hamburger menu. And when I click on it, I can see that there are two types of navigation that I can access. So a top, a more simple navigation on top, and there is navigation through their product lines. And there is also scrolling, so it's an extremely rich navigation element that allows me to directly get into their products right on the navigation element. And the last example I would like to show you is this website from a German agency, where the navigation element is also coming from the hamburger menu, and it's also visually very rich. On the back, you can see that there is this beautiful animation that enriches the experience, the user experience, when selecting elements on the website. So why and when can you use full screen navigation? Whenever you want to create extremely rich experiences for your users. Typically, full screen navigation is very simple and easy to use for the user, for the end user. So we're talking about very appealing and very creative user interfaces. Some of the problems that using this type of navigation may bring are related to the number of items that it typically can accommodate. We have seen some solutions where scrolling is available so that users can scroll between different menu options. It's obviously far more time consuming than regular navigation, because it requires a lot of effort and detail into making each of those elements really stand out. And it might not be as flexible for websites that change often, exactly due to the time that is required and the effort that is required to create each of those elements. So if you plan to develop a website that may change over time, this may not be the right approach. And the last navigation pattern that I'd like to talk about, and then that we can see these days, are sticky navigation elements. And sticky navigation is something that has been around for a couple years, a little bit more maybe. We can immediately spot it when navigation stays in place close to one of the sides of the screen. And sticky navigation not only has to be stick to the top, it can only be placed on the sides or on the bottom of the screen. In some cases, there will be headings from subsections that may also become fixed when scrolling the page, and replaced or be appended to the existing fixed navigation. And let's go through some examples of sticky navigation. This is kind of the most simple example of sticky navigation. You have all most likely seen this. So it's a navigation element that keeps exactly the same structure, so it really doesn't change. Eventually it may get a little smaller when we start scrolling, but it's pretty much the same as what we had on the beginning when the page opened. Then we have different types of approach to sticky navigation elements. In this case, for example, we have a hero area that has absolutely no navigation on it except for the scroll icon that tells me that I should scroll the page to see more. And this drives user attention to the initial message. So we're not getting users to unfocus from what we want them to see here by displaying navigation at this moment. Navigation becomes available when we start scrolling. And it really comes from the bottom. And as we get to the top, it sticks to the top. And we're talking about a navigation element that also doesn't change. So the navigation items on the nav are the same no matter what moment in scrolling we are at. Another type of navigation is the one that actually changes depending on context. And In this case, for Design Modo, you can see that there is navigation on top when we enter the page for the first time. But as we start scrolling, there is a sticky navigation on top that is different from the initial one. So this navigation makes total available depending on the content that I'm seeing. It depends on the page that I'm at. So it's a contextual sticky navigation element different from the ones that we have seen previously. And the same goes for Intercom's website. So there is navigation on top that is sticky, but as we enter, for example, one of their products, you will see that as we scroll down the page, navigation changes, and it now is completely related to the product that I am previewing at this moment. So why use sticky navigation? Users can access menu options at any time. So that is one of the best characteristics of this type of pattern. It may provide a contextualized user experience, as we have seen in these two last examples, where navigation totally depends on what I am seeing at a certain point. So we can change that sticky navigation to whatever context the user is in a certain moment in time. It obviously makes usage faster. Because since navigation items are displayed at all times, users don't have to scroll back to the top or click a button to scroll back to the top. They can easily access any of the navigation options that are made available to them. And when contextualized, obviously, it makes it even faster because typical options for that scenario will be displayed on the page at each moment. It's obviously extremely convenient when combined with infinite scroll. So when we're talking about an infinite scroll user interaction pattern, a sticky navigation menu can be a great convenience for users that scroll passing the first page of content. Some of the cons, obviously it takes some page real estate, but typically there is some design concern making it a small element and smaller than the typical navigation on a landing page or on the top of the page. It may also not be suitable for very large menu structures. And this is because when you start scrolling, we have to accommodate a few more elements rather than navigation only. So we have to accommodate typically the logo, eventually login information, and even in some cases we have to accommodate search elements, which makes it a relatively small area that remains available for the navigation element itself. So if we're talking about very large menu structures, it may not be suitable, or we may have to adjust what menu elements we make available at a certain point, depending on the space that we have available on the page. So another big pattern or a type of pattern is organizing content. And today I'd like to focus on a very, very, very specific UI pattern that is super popular these days, and which is the usage of cards. Cards are a pattern completely on the rise. We could talk about hundreds of different UI patterns, but definitely this is one of the most used patterns nowadays. Cards were made famous by Pinterest, by Google's material design, eventually even by Facebook and Twitter. And they are an amazing way of displaying information and actually break down that information into individual blocks. And visually for the user, it's very simple to spot on those blocks since they're condensed within a card. Cards typically allow brands to show very large amounts of content on a screen at the same time. But it's very manageable visually because users can quickly scan and they can quickly identify the information they are looking for on a page. Cards are typically made of different elements. They have the title, which is the context. They have the lens, which is something that allows me to see further within the card before deciding if I'm going to click, and they have triggers. So this would be a typical card where the context is the title. The lens would be kind of a description of what's inside, and eventually the picture. The lens allows me to decide if I'm going to click on it or not. And cards always have triggers, options for users to select. There are all sorts of cards that you can create. Not all cards will have all the three elements. You may have cards that only have context. You may have cards that only have lens. Others will have context and triggers, and so on. So depending on the usage that you want to make, you will have different elements on the card. And cards can be organized in what are called container styles. And when we look at container styles and how they are organized, we can immediately spot the type of container we're looking at. We can immediately spot it on. It's kind of a Pinterest style board. So this would be the board container style. And typically these are organized into columns, and elements inside each card are typically from with the same structure. So if you think about Pinterest cards, you can quickly visualize that each element is very similar to the other in terms of structure. We can also see cards on Facebook, and it's a different type of organization. There is a main column, a main feed that displays different types of cards. So we can have cards that are based on video, others are more based on text, others will be kind of a photo albums. And then you have cards on the right that give you additional information on what you are seeing. So you can have statistics, you can see the list of people that you are following, your friends, you can even see ads or other type of information. This type of cards organization is a feed. So we're talking about a different structure, more flexible in the type of cards that can be put on it. We have a different approach to cards that typically is not seen on websites, but more on apps. And it resembles the Apple Passbook. And this is a stack of cards. It kind of resembles what you have on your wallet. So you would have all your physical cards lined up one next to the other. And this is what happens exactly on Passbook and other types of interactions that we can see in mobile applications. And this would be a stack of cards. And cards can also be organized in what's called a collage. And this is the same that's used in Flipboard, where we have all sorts of different type of cards that are organized together to create a beautiful collage that users can scroll. And content typically is syndicated in this type of card container, kind of like a magazine. Quickly, we can just open up some of these cards, and so we have Pinterest cards displayed in columns. We have Facebook cards with a feed where we have the main feed on the center and then additional information on the right, and we have the collage displaying just like in Flipboard, where we have this kind of magazine user interface available. Another major goal when using web design trends that I would like to talk about is the goal to actually be unique and focus on originality. And we have discussed a lot of UI patterns. Now we will be focusing on some patterns that will allow you to create those really unique websites and that really creative web presence. And I would like to start by talking a little bit about an amazing trend these days, which is the usage of engaging illustrations. And we see that brands more and more use this popular alternative to stock photos, which is the usage of illustrations. And for this matter, I would like to show a few examples online. So let's start by Intercom. They have changed their web presence. They have completely directed themselves to the usage of custom illustrations. And the truth is that these illustrations are very personal to Intercom and very tailored to the brand. So we can immediately tell by looking at one of these illustrations that we are talking about an Intercom website. And they have rolled out an entire identity based on these new illustrations. So not only the illustrations themselves with little micro animations on each of these elements, but also by creating custom iconography that is associated to the same concept, kind of to the same theme, as we can see it down here with also these micro interactions, and even in typography. So there is kind of a whole package that is related to this illustration concept. Another very good example with a totally different type of illustration is Oscar, which is a health insurance company that has also created illustrations to differentiate their brand from the competition. And they also have created all sorts of illustration, not only for hero areas, but also with their custom iconography. And I would like to show you also a different approach to illustrations, where we have a very, very strong illustration present all over the scrolling of the page. And this really is tailored to this brand. In this case, it's an agency. And we can immediately tell that we're talking about Wit when we see this type of illustration. So illustrations give users a stronger personal connection with each brand. So they are totally custom to that brand. And they actually give you more control over your choices. So when we're trying to clarify some complex concepts, typically it's easier to put it into an illustration rather than creating photography to explain the concept. So we're talking about much greater creative freedom, and eventually, most of the times, it's cheaper to use illustrations than to hire professional photographers to make a custom photo session. And alongside with the usage of engaging and in custom illustrations, we see that one of the biggest trends these days is the usage of compelling fonts. And we are living on the golden era of web typography. We are far away from this very small list of fonts that we used to have available years ago. And now we can actually use typography as a powerful tool to input personality into our websites and to set the right tone of what we want to say to our users. Some of the trends that we can see nowadays in typography are related to the usage of really, really big fonts, usage of all caps areas, and I'll show a few examples of each of these. Using hand-drawn fonts, which is also a major trend these days, usage of serif and slab serif fonts, as well as retro fonts, but also mixing and matching all types of fonts together and creating kind of an integrated interface. And let's take a look at some examples in terms of typography. Okay. Let's start with bold, and that's already open. So this is an example where you can see like these really big fonts as a major trend, also combined with another major trend, which is the all caps trend. This sends a message loud and clear to the users. So take care or be careful when using this trend, because it's easy to exaggerate on the bad way. So it might look like you're yelling to your users, but when done well, as this is the case, it can create beautiful and powerful interfaces. If we take a look at draft, we will see another trend. So we can see kind of hand-drawn typography combined with also the all caps trend. This creates kind of a distinctive and very, very personal touch to the page. The usage of these little hand-drawn fonts here and then. Sometimes it might not be adequate for corporate websites, but it's super adequate for services websites, as it brings kind of a personal touch to the web page. Let me also show you Plated. And here you can see beautiful usage of serif fonts. We've come years of using sans serif fonts, and now serif fonts are coming back. So we're kind of back to basics with elegant and readable and clean serif fonts. Let me also show you an example of a retro font usage. And this kind of bring us some nostalgia mixed with some futurism. So it's beautiful usage of retro fonts in popular and modern products. And we have here an example of kind of that mix and match sense that I was talking about. So typically for creating a mix and match website, it's not variations on the same font. We're talking about a minimum of three different font types that have to be carefully selected so that we can create a beautiful final effect. And this is the case. So when then right, combining fonts, it's really effective. So compelling fonts and usage of very strong typography is obviously expected by the user. It displays brand identity, it enhances your content, and it will help you create hierarchy on your website. Another element that will help you create that uniqueness on your web experiences has to do with the usage of non-stock photos. And custom photography is a big, big trend these days. It's a privileged way to provide some authenticity and uniqueness to your website. And users can spot a stock photo when they see one, trust me. So either if it is a bizarre photo like this and you can immediately tell that this is stock photo, or even when we're talking about kind of these group of business people in their suits. So users can spot this right on. So it will probably take some time before much of this kind of cheesy stock photography disappears. But what we expect is that in this coming year, there will be an immense change from stock photography to custom photography. And brands and designers will be thinking much more carefully about the imagery they use on their sites by hiring professional photographers and by creating custom photography. And I will quickly show you just a couple of examples of brands that have created some custom photography elements. Zendesk, and for those of you that use Zendesk, we always recall Zendesk's campaigns. So they always have beautiful photography associated with their campaigns, always custom. Here you can see them matched with also custom illustrations, which is also very, very strong within Zendesk user experience. And here we can see another example of beautiful photography, custom photography used to provide users the experience that actually gives them the sense of brand that is required. So why should you be using non-stock photos? First, it provides authenticity to the user experience. It's a differentiator, so visually it's much more diverse. It gives you a lot of creative freedom when compared to stock photography. It helps you build brand identity. So even when there is no budget, and that might happen. So we understand that custom photography is obviously far more expensive than buying stock. Even when that is the case, try to combine some stock photography with custom photography and use custom photography for more privileged areas, as is the case of the hero area or some landing pages. And one of the other elements that can help you create these unique experiences is or are long scrolling websites and storytelling by using long scrolling websites. And as the case, try to combine some stock photography with custom photography and use custom photography for more privileged areas, as is the case of the hero area or some landing pages. And one of the other elements that can help you create these unique experiences is or are long scrolling websites and storytelling where I was. And I'll keep talking about some web design trends, namely how to create some interactive experiences. And here I'll just like to start talking a little bit about creating using micro animations. These micro animations are something that has been appearing on the past months or kind of the past year or so, and they're great for those little actions and for providing acknowledgement of user action and giving users some visual rewards. Micro interactions typically have four elements associated with them. So there is kind of a trigger, something that starts the action, some rules to tell what the micro interaction can do or not. There is some feedback that goes back to the user, and there are some loops that tell if the micro interaction should go on or not. And I'd like to just quickly show you a couple examples of micro interactions. And just to give you a quick example, so this type of interaction that happens when I like something or that explains me the status of what I'm doing or that tells the user kind of where he is and shows some progression, but always with this visual information of what's going on. Some highlighting of changes like when we receive a new message, when we get a new comment on our posts. Something that explains us in terms of context where we are, like we're closing this and then we see that it went that, so my checkout went to that little icon there. So those little visual clues are called micro interactions. Micro interactions are kind of a no-brainer these days. So if you are creating your website now, users are definitely expecting you to use micro interactions everywhere. So it will help them navigate in your site. It will visually communicate status and changes. They immediately get feedback on their actions and it creates a super engaging experience. So definitely micro interactions are something that you have to consider when creating your website. And alongside with micro interactions, you have to consider richer animations. And when we're talking about richer animations, we're talking about far more complex animations like the ones, and let's open up a few websites. So animations that occur like when we're scrolling, and these can be simple, like just showing up, or animations that occur when we're scrolling down the page, to some more complex animations that, for example, like this, provide kind of an inline tutorial to the functionality that is available on the website. Or we can even have far more complex animations on the website that require kind of some handcrafting when creating the website. And I'm just scrolling the page. What you are seeing is me scrolling the page. And there is all sorts of animation going on as I scroll down the page to tell me a story and to explain what the brand does. So you can actually combine beautiful animations in your website to create these amazing experiences. So it's far more engaging than static contact. Users perceive their message really fast, and it drives user attentions to where you want them to look at. And typically, these animations and these interactive experiences live and depend on something that is called parallax. And parallax, it's what helps us create, and I'll show you one example, a very good example of parallax usage. Parallax, it's what helps us create kind of those, these 2D, 3D effect that kind of scrolls elements on different speeds on the page, and creates also beautiful user interfaces when scrolling down. So all combined, micro animations, the usage of rich or micro interactions, the usage of rich animations on the page alongside with parallax scrolling will help you create the interactive experiences that your user is actually waiting for and that is eager to be delighted with. So parallax will give you a sense of perspective, provides more lively experiences, it improves storytelling, and definitely increases the durations of visits as it reduces bounce rate dramatically. So we went through lots of, or some of the trends that we can see nowadays and that will help you create engaging user experiences. But it's important for you to grab these concepts and be able to take this into action and into a real website. And I'd like to quickly talk about three tools for rapid prototyping. And more and more, we see not only startups, but also large companies use rapid prototyping as a method towards creating the final website. It typically helps discuss the user experience and the workflow on the website on an early stage of development and pretty much put everyone in the team on the same page. One of these tools is Balsamiq. Balsamiq is a rapid wireframing tool. So basically, it allows you to create from scratch these wireframes for websites, for desktop apps, for mobile apps as well, also for different types of application and dialogue windows. And the truth is that you can, on a very early stage, when you still don't know exactly pixel perfect how you want your interface to be, it will allow you to explain the global idea of the user interface in a very, very fast way, because it's super fast to create these wireframes. And all the team elements will be able to discuss and decide what to do next the next stages on the process of creating the website. So it has tools for discussion within the team, for sharing within the team. So it's a very useful tool for an early stage in development. When you are on the next stage, you can try the Envision app. Envision is a different tool. So it's a design, communication, and collaboration tool. And it works on top of your designs. So let's say you started your designs in Photoshop, or you're coming from Sketch or from InDesign. You can upload your designs into the Envision app, and you can actually automate those designs and define kind of hotspots in your design to create kind of visually functional interfaces, kind of proofs of what's the website's going to be like, and receive user feedback on an early stage to communicate with your team members. And kind of have a real-time design collaboration on top of your designs. The Envision app does not allow you to create wireframes from scratch as Balsamiq does. So you will always have to work on your Photoshop or your InDesign or Sketch layouts. UXPin is another tool kind of similar to the Envision app, with the difference that you can also import your designs from Photoshop or InDesign and so on. And unlike InVision, it actually imports all the layers that you had defined on the previous tool. So InVision flattens all your layers down, and you have to define the hotspots based on that. With UXPin, you actually have access to all those layers, and you can animate them within the UXPin tool by directly accessing the layers. It also has this this kind of designer where you can also create the mockups and the wireframing for your application. So developing prototypes from scratch is eventually easier here in UXPin. So there is a large library of elements that can be used, and you can just drag and drop to the working area. There are also collaboration features and validation features, a lot of project tracking. So it's also an awesome tool for quick prototyping. I strongly suggest this UXPin book, The Ultimate Guide to Prototyping, because it will allow you to understand a little bit better how to use prototyping to actually get faster and quickly get to a layout and to wireframing where all the team is on the same page and all the team approves that design, and you are ready to go to the final stage of development. So rapid prototyping is important. Typically, it allows you to be much faster on getting to a final user interface that is validated. Most tools, and I've talked about three tools, but there are dozens of tools to help you create quick prototypes. Most tools have libraries of elements that can be used to create those interactions or to create the wireframes from scratch. They easily simulate all the user flows. So this is one of the most important feature of these rapid prototyping tools, which is simulating the flow and the workflow that occurs when users go from a screen to another, or when users click on certain elements or certain buttons or navigation. It allows, or almost all of them allow, for collaboration amongst team members. So this is also a very important feature, getting everyone on the same page when it comes to mockup and wireframing. And a lot of them allow you different presentation options. So when you are done with your wireframing, you can actually export either to PDFs, or some of them allow exporting to web or mobile apps so that you can have a real prototype experience. Some of these tools might require some learning, so you might not be familiar with using some of these tools at first, so it may be something to consider before selecting a prototyping tool. Eventually, some might have limited fidelity, but it also depends on what you're trying to achieve. So on early stages of development, this might not be a problem. It's maybe a feature on its own. So when we're just trying to validate a concept, eventually fidelity and functionality is not what we're trying to achieve. We're really trying to validate that the user interface and the workflow will work when we actually decide to code. And now that we have gone through the trends, we've talked about how you can grab those trends and quickly put them into a wireframe and test your concept, then we have come to the final stage, which is actually building the website. And nowadays, the market provides numerous options for developing websites with absolutely or almost no code. So we're talking about the website builders, and there are dozens of website builders available. I'd like to talk about a couple of these builders. Obviously, they require far less time to develop the website, less hassle. Many of them do not require any coding knowledge, and they will create beautiful and responsive user experiences out of the box. If you are a non-technical person, and a lot of times this happens in startups, probably you should start with Squarespace. Squarespace is one of the most widely used website builders. It's focused on providing simple ways to create beautiful, responsive websites in minutes. So you will not have to hire a professional designer or a professional developer to create your website. It provides you a selection of about 50 or so templates. So you can start by selecting one of the available templates. They're all responsive out of the box. And it will take you to kind of a visual editor where you can actually customize in more detail the website using a sophisticated yet a little bit limited tool set. The downside is that due to the immense number of users that Squarespace has, and having only 50 templates, obviously you might end up with a website that is similar to a lot of other people or a lot of other companies. So there is the risk of kind of a lack of uniqueness when using this type of tools, which may be unsuitable for professional designers. So it's very useful when we're talking about non-technical people. Typical for professional designers or developers, they find the tool a little bit limiting. If you are a developer or a designer, you might like to use Webflow. Webflow is a very, very powerful tool. It has the technical aspect that Squarespace doesn't. It also provides you a set of templates that you can start with if you want. But it has a very, very extensive tool sets and a gallery of elements that can be added to pages with a lot of control for designers and developers to create a final user interface that suits their needs. It incorporates nowadays a CMS, so it's a super powerful tool, and you can host your website with Webflow or not. So you can actually export the website and host it in a different location if it's your interest. It also has kind of a gallery of designers if you're interested in hiring one. So it's a very interesting and powerful tool if you want to get to a design fast and to a beautiful design fast. So I think we've pretty much covered all the topics that I'd like to talk to you about today on the road to creating beautiful, unique, and usable websites. So we've covered main trends that are used nowadays. We have talked about some tools towards rapid prototyping, and we have also talked about a couple of tools that will help you actually build your website fast and deploy it in an easy way. I would leave you with some references if you want to take a look after the session. You have my Twitter handle and my company's Twitter handle if you want to reach me. Don't hesitate. And thank you. You can follow up this and other master classes in the URL on the screen. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to post them on Twitter using the hashtag that we have shared on the beginning of the session. So thank you for watching and have a great day.